Hey, welcome to Braves Country.
Coming up on Braves Country, an artist from Jefferson, Georgia. No, not Brantley Gilbert, but this guy's had incredible amounts of influence over the careers of people like Brantley Gilbert, Florida Georgia Line, and Zac Brown Band. He was a school teacher before he was an artist. He's overcome incredible amounts of adversity, including almost losing his vision. And he was banned in the city of Chattanooga. Why in the world would that happen? He'll explain it in his own words next on Braves Country. This episode of Braves Country is sponsored by our Braves fan friends down at Century 21, Solomon Properties in Savannah, Georgia, servicing the historic downtown Savannah area, the island area, and Atlanta's beach, beautiful Tybee Island, Georgia. Call Joel Solomon today, 912-604-0896. That's 912-604-0896 for all your real estate needs on the Georgia coast.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballou here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Man, we have a great guest today. You're right, Tug. Corey Smith is from Jefferson, Georgia, and he has earned a loyal fan base simply by telling it the way it is. That's why he's on Braves Country today. Smith has released 10 albums, including 2011's top 20 release, The Broken Record. And Corey has written every word on every album. He's produced 9 out of 10 of his own records, except for the time he teamed up with producer Keith Stiegel of Alan Jackson and Zac Brown fame for his album While the Getting Is Good, which was released on Sugar Hill Records, a very famous label. Smith's sold-out concerts or audience sing-alongs with such fan favorites as the coming-of-age anthem 21, the nostalgic Time Warp, If I Could Do It Again, and the group hug, I Love Everyone. And today, Corey Smith brought his guitar, and he's up here at the Braves Radio Network to talk with us and sing a few songs on the Braves Country Podcast. So please welcome Atlanta Braves and Georgia Bulldogs fan, Corey Smith.
Buddy. Welcome, man. Thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be here. It's a beautiful day to be driving down into the city. It was great day to be here. Great day to be at the Battery, especially with all the excitement around the Braves.
No kidding, man. And I got to tell you, I'm a little mad that Scott decided not to put Every Dog Has His Day in that list of songs that you got
to
sing.
Well, I was told that I don't really have to abide by the list. I can just
go. That's good then, man, because I'm telling you, that song right there, I mean, that one will give you cold chills and make you, if you're a Georgia fan, a true Georgia fan, that one will give you, make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, and dang it, if you're a Georgia fan and ain't ever heard that song, something is wrong. So we got to correct that at some point. But man, it's so glad, it's so awesome. I'm so glad to have you here, We could start out with the fact that growing up in Jefferson, Georgia, close to the University of Georgia, I'm sure that's where that passion for the team comes from, right?
Yeah, you know, it was odd. I can't say that I was like a diehard Georgia fan growing up.
Okay.
Like, as a kid, I mean, I was a Georgia fan because what else? I wasn't a Tech fan.
Right.
But I was, you know, I was around it, you know. We would watch it on TV. Like, I remember being little and remember people talking about Herschel Walker. But I wasn't huge into it. I was a bigger Jefferson Dragons fan, I guess.
Okay.
I was, you know, that seemed a lot more relevant to me. I do remember going down when I was in high school. I went to a fundraiser with the band. I wasn't in the band, like the marching band, but I had friends that were. And I went to help them one day you know, to sell Cokes at a Georgia game to raise money for the band.
Sure.
And that was the first time I'd been in Sanford Stadium, and it blew my mind. I was just like, oh, my God, these people are nuts, you know. And it was awesome. I'll never forget it. It still didn't, like, convert me necessarily, where I was like, it seemed almost alien. I couldn't believe that that kind of thing was happening every Saturday, or, you know, right, so many Saturdays in the fall, just sure, right down the road. I remember on Saturdays, traffic in Jefferson was always horrible when there, yeah, was a Georgia home game. But that was kind of my experience with it growing up, until I went to college. I didn't start out at Georgia. I went to Gainesville College, mm-hmm, there for a few years. I kind of flunked out of there for a little bit, got my grades up, and eventually transferred out to West Georgia out in Carrollton. I followed my girlfriend at the time, now wife, I followed her out there. Went there for a year and finally got my grades up enough where I could get into Georgia. She wanted to go to Georgia. I was like, well, you know, that's close to home. I've been around Athens, yeah, my whole life. It didn't really, I wasn't crazy about the idea. She really wanted to go because both her parents went to school there. So I was like, well, I guess I'll go to Athens and, right, go to school at Georgia. So that year I went to my first Georgia game as a Georgia student, and it was a Georgia-Georgia Tech game. It was cold. It was sleeting.
Oh, wow. And
I think we lost.
Oh, no.
But when I got in there and the trumpet was up in the corner,
yeah,
and Larry Munson's, you know,
just the calls of the game.
Oh, my gosh. It was the classic
cold chills.
I was like, okay, these are my people. Yeah. I am in. And from that day forward, I've been all in on Georgia football.
I love the fact that you admit that Georgia lost the first game that you went to. And the reason I say that is because I promised my wife that I would never tell my son Jacob that the first game he ever went to, because he is a diehard Dogs fan, the first game he ever went to, Georgia lost. And I told my wife from the time, because he was like 3 years old, and I was, mm-hmm, holding him. The stadium was so quiet because they were losing to Vanderbilt at homecoming. And I was, and he was asleep on my shoulder, and I was like, I will never tell this kid the truth, well, ever.
Amazing. Yeah.
You know, I think it speaks, though, to how powerful, though, the game is. And in terms of, like, you normally associate those moments with who you were with more, right, so than the outcome of the game.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I think of like my all-time favorite Georgia memory is when walking out of the stadium in South Bend when we beat Notre Dame a few years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's because my kids were with me.
Yeah.
Like and my wife and kids were all there, and it was just a great moment. And that one revolved around a win, but I have lots of other of those,
yeah,
that I remember who I was with. I remember, you know, like,
It's almost like music, because music does the same thing, in my view, is that it takes you back to that place where you were with somebody that you love or somebody that means a lot to you, or a family setting and a gathering, but that's kind of the soundtrack or the what brought everything together in that moment in time.
Yeah, I've had a lot of those in Jacksonville, you know, just a lot of great experiences in Jacksonville that it was awesome until, like, the end. Like,
yeah,
long ride back, yeah, home, but worth it, you know. And I remember the people I was with, and, mm-hmm, you know, having a great time at the tailgate and walking into the stadium all pumped up. And we weren't that pumped up leaving the stadium always, but
right. Lately it's been pretty good, though.
Lately it's been a lot better.
Now, we know you love them Dogs, but how about the Atlanta Braves? They're your team as well, right?
Yeah, you know, it's similarly, like, growing up in Jefferson, Georgia, you don't really have any choice. You're going to be a Braves fan,
right,
or a Dogs fan.
That's right.
So, yeah, the Braves were always on TV. You know, my earliest memories, you know, I remember the games at Fulton County Stadium and Dale Murphy and,
oh my gosh,
Goldilocks. Yeah. I remember my grandparents, especially my grandfather, who was a World War II Marine veteran.
God bless
awesome.
Him.
And awesome. He loved the Braves. And so all summer long, the Braves were always on. And, you know, as I got older and, you know, especially as we got into the early 90s, then it took on a whole new significance.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. A lot of – I remember going to games at old Fulton County Stadium.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't remember who won those games either. I just remember being there and having such a big impact on me.
Well, probably not the Braves too much back in those days.
Right.
But it didn't matter, because it's just a part of the fabric of our lives down here in the South. Yeah. And I'm glad to have you on the show, such a big Braves and Dogs fan. And what do you love most about the game of baseball itself, Corey?
You know, I think I appreciate the amount of focus that it requires. Not just the long-term focus, like the lifetime of acquiring the skills,
right,
but just in the game. Like, when you think of somebody in the outfield that every moment, you know, they have to know that ball could be coming to them and have to have enough awareness to know where that ball needs to go. You don't get any time off. You have, mm-mm, to stay so laser-focused you know, and that's every position, the batter including. It's just a tremendous amount of mental energy.
No, it is. You're exactly right. It's a game that goes slow until it doesn't, and then it goes real fast, real quick, and then it's back to slow. Yeah. And it's a game that is made up of, it's a team game, but made up of individual moments like you're describing, you know? And that's I would imagine being an artist as you are is kind of that way too, right? You have to hit everything that you do. You have to hit all the right notes. You have to hit all the right chords. And if you don't, it messes the team up.
Yeah, and at the same time, you have to have the resiliency to shake it off when it doesn't, because there's never a perfect show. And it's both the shorter term and the longer term. Like in the game, all right, I missed that one. That was bad. That was an error. But the next play,
that's
you got to
right.
move on.
Next play.
Same thing on when you zoom out. All right, we just lost that one. That was a bad one, but we got to play. And when you look at how long the baseball season is and the type of resiliency and focus it takes, and the Braves are a testament to that, with, you know, to be down and face, especially the kind of adversity they face this season, to have that mental fortitude to be able to stay focused on the long term and not get bogged down on what's in front of you. It's amazing.
You're listening to the Braves Country Podcast. Tug Coward along with Scott Bunt and special guest Corey Smith, who is an incredible artist that is born and raised in Jefferson, Georgia, and he's known throughout the Southeast, throughout Braves country. You sang the national anthem at the Braves Stadium and for the Braves. I've been told, and Calista Clark has told us, that many people that have been on the show have told us that singing the national anthem can be one of the most nerve-wracking things, because it's something that means so much to so many, and everybody knows it, and you want to make it perfect. Did you have that feeling, or did you get out there and just knock it out?
Yeah, I think for me, it's sort of the equivalent of that bottom of the ninth, and you got to make the hit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Which
it's a great comparison.
Yeah, it's like you got one shot at this. Don't mess it up. It's taking you a long time to get to this point. You know, let's see what you can do. It's a lot of nerves. I think I did pretty good every time I was able to do it, and by the last time I did it, I was really able to not be so nervous and actually just enjoy the moment and not be so, you know, nervy about it.
Sure.
Now, Corey, what do you think about this year's team? We're in the heart of the NLCS right now. We're looking at possibly getting to the World Series. What do you think? How far are we going to go?
Oh, I think we're going to go.
Let's go.
Right. What else am I going to say?
That's right. What's the alternative? I think we've won the first two. Probably going to get swept from here on out.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that.
No, it's been fun, and I've enjoyed the last postseason as well, and I'm enjoying watching it with my kids, because I think that they're. Those memories that I have of watching
That's
the game
right.
with my grandfather and my dad, I think those things are burning in them as well.
Absolutely,
which makes it that much sweeter.
Oh my gosh, there's nothing better, because again, as I was saying with my own son, you know, watching those Georgia games every weekend, and as much as I love him more than anything else on earth. You know, Jesus first, and then my wife and son, and then everybody else. But it's interesting because he's the worst fan in the world. Like, he's that fan that if there's a botched snap, if there's an incomplete pass, or if the defense lets somebody score, this is the worst team I've ever seen. How could they possibly be number one in the nation? He's just railing. I'm like, dude, settle down.
That's teen angst.
It has to be. I'm like, settle down. Calm down. But it's funny because, Corey, my wife's from upstate New York, and she didn't grow up with college football.
Oh, yeah.
She grew up with baseball and football and basketball and all and hockey and all that sort of stuff, but she didn't grow up with college football. And when we first got married, which is 20 years now, we would watch Georgia games, and if they lost, it just ruined my weekend. Finally, I was able to reel that in because she couldn't get it. She just was like, why are you letting this game ruin the rest of your weekend? You still got the rest of Saturday and all of Sunday. And now, because she's such a fan, she's hook, line, and sinker. It actually ruins hers, and I'm the one that's able to reel it in. So I've got a house full of maniacs, is what I'm trying to say.
It's completely irrational.
But we all
do it. I will tell you, the worst is the games where we've had, you know, like a 3:30 kickoff or a night game on a Saturday, and I have a show to play, right? And let's say the game's still going on, and it's time for me to go on stage, and it's a close game. The last one I remember is when Notre Dame played in Athens.
Yeah.
My family's at the game. We have season tickets. For years, I haven't been able to go to most of the games.
My
wife,
playing.
Yeah. But wife and kids are there. My father-in-law is usually with them. And They're all at the game, and I think we had to go on in like the third quarter. And it was just brutal the whole time.
Oh
and
gosh.
Part of me doesn't want to wants to be able to block it out.
Right.
Don't tell me what happens until after. Meanwhile, yeah. another part of me is like, just tell me.
Yeah.
It's hard to stay focused on playing music. And it's what's even worse is when there's been a disappointing game.
Yeah.
And then I got to go play. It's just hard to shake off
and
the disappointment of a loss.
So disheartening, and it's irrational. You described it so well. People don't understand it. It is irrational, and I don't care. Because I love it that much.
Now, Corey Smith, you mentioned Dale Murphy being one of your favorites coming up. Who are some of your favorite players on the current Braves team?
You know, I really like watching Ozzie Albies.
Me too. He's my favorite player on the team.
You know, he reminds me of Noshon Moreno that Noshon always just seemed like a kid. And I got to know Noshon over the years.
Oh, that's cool.
That was his mentality all the time. He was like a kid playing, you know, little league football. Like, you know, he just loved to play the game. And that's the way... Albies he's always smiling, just seems like he's a kid that just loves to play ball.
Such joy on his face, and especially when it's he and Acuña, and I know Acuña's hurt this year, but those two together, they're almost like brothers or something, that are always pushing each other. One minute they're hugging, next minute they're shoving each other, but they're always playing with such joy, and you can see it on their face, and it is so much fun.
And Freddie Freeman, he's got the same thing. He just seems to be smiling. I always want to know, like, what is he talking to the people about on first base? Because so often when people come up, he's like, what are they talking about?
How you been? How's your mom and them? Yeah. Is that what it is?
I don't know. I would really like to know. What are you asking them?
Let's put you in that situation. Let's put Corey Smith on first base. And you know, somebody walks or they get a hit or whatever. What are you saying to XYZ player, whomever it is from the Dodgers?
I'm probably not going to say anything.
Yeah, my base.
Yeah, I'm in my head space here. I don't want you to mess with my mojo. But he's more like, this is my world. Welcome into it. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
But I hope you're about to be out.
Yeah. Seriously, I'm gonna do my best to get you out.
Like, is he poking at him? Like, try to steal. Yeah. I dare you to try to steal.
No, I guarantee you, he's probably talking about his son Charlie's softball or little league game or something, because he is such a nice guy. And he's always smiling, like you said. There's no doubt about it. Back when you were at UGA, you majored in social studies, and you wrote songs, performed there in Athens. What are some of your favorite venues to play in Athens? I mean, is it the obvious 40-watt Georgia Theater, or is it different?
Well, I mean, the Georgia Theater is an obvious one. That I've had some real pivotal moments in my career happen there at the theater. But oddly, I didn't really play much when I was in school there. I would play at DT's Down Under. Used to have an open mic night, and I played at that. And one time they had a competition, an open mic competition, and I lost it, and it just devastated me. I was like, I can't even win the open mic at DT's Down
now,
Under.
Now, who beat Corey Smith at the open mic?
I have no idea who it was, but I didn't like him. I know that much.
Back to Freddie Freeman. Get off my base. I love that.
But I remember I didn't put my I put down my guitar and didn't pick it up for a month or two after that.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
It disappointed me so much. And then later, when I got out of school, is when I started playing at like Tasty World, and then the Wild Wing.
Mm-hmm.
Wild Wing was a big one for me. I liked that one a lot. And then worked my way up to the theater.
I like those chicken feathers they have at Wild Wing Cafe. Those things are so tasty.
They would have the that wing buffet.
Yeah.
At the one in Athens, we would sneak out there for lunch sometimes. Oh my goodness.
Count me in.
Do you remember Steve Arino's?
I love Steve Arino's.
Man, I don't think they're there anymore.
They're not there, but the subs are amazing. But the wings, they kept them combined. It wasn't flats and drums. It was like you'd order 12 and you're getting 24, buddy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
It was amazing stuff. Now, I hear that you took your first job teaching geography, history, and guitar at North Gwinnett High School in Suwanee, Georgia, before deciding that you wanted to pursue your music career full-time at the age of 28. Tell us about those years teaching and how you came to the realization that you wanted to become a full-time recording artist.
It was a gradual thing. I didn't expect it. I mean, when I graduated school, I wanted to be a high school social studies teacher. I thought that's what I would retire doing. I was passionate about it. I remember walking down the halls at North on my first days, and I just felt like, man, I made it.
Yeah.
You know, I finished school and I'm here making a difference. And I would play guitar for the students on Fridays if they were good. And most of the time they weren't even good, but I'd still play guitar
the reason to play the guitar.
And at first I was nervous about it. I thought, you know, this is going to be so like dorky, right? Yeah. The guitar playing. But the kids,
I bet
the
they
kids
loved it.
I'm sure. I mean, they loved it. And they were like, oh, Mr. Smith, you know, why are you teaching? Why aren't you doing this? And, you know, at first I was like, well, this is what I want to do. Like, I don't, you know, this is just a hobby. And then the more time went on, it was like started becoming harder to answer that. And I had a chance to make records in the summertime. I won this open mic contest in Monroe, and the prize was 12 hours of studio time. And by that point, I'd written a whole bunch of songs. I went in and made my first record, Undertones, practically free because I had the free studio time, and then printed a bunch of CDs. And that record had 21 on it and Sun Goes Down in Georgia. And so I was playing little bar gigs kind of on the heels of that, just kind of playing around, you know, Atlanta, Northeast Georgia, Athens, Dahlonega, Carrollton, you know, Buckhead. And, you know, the next summer, I saved up money from those gigs and made another record. And then the next summer I did it. So by my fourth year of teaching, I'd already put out three records. And that was when, like, I got to the point where I was selling out shows. And then eventually when I sold out the theater in advance, it was sort of like God saying, hey, dude, like, you got this. Don't sweat this. This is what you ought to be doing.
That's incredible. I love that. At any point before, because I want you to play something, one of those early songs that you're just talking about. Was there any point where the kids would actually show up at some of your shows? Because I would imagine it have to happen.
Oh yeah, it was highly inappropriate too.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, but not intentionally. You can't help it. Man, they had seen you play, and all of a sudden you're selling out a show. I wouldn't want to go see my teacher play.
Were you giving out field trip credits or something like that? What was going on?
it was always bizarre because, you know, especially that most of the time I was playing in bars, so I'd see my kids like, I know you aren't old enough to be in here.
Seriously, man. Right? But you can't rat them out.
No, it was a precarious situation to be in. Plus, I was getting to the point where I would play at Moondogs in Buckhead, like on a Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. And I'd be at school in the morning. Yeah. I wouldn't be finished there until like 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then drive back. Sometimes I'd just drive straight to the school in Swanee and sleep for a few hours in the car and go in and try to teach. Like, this is not good.
That's all right, because you're probably on the same schedule as your students.
At the time, no, you're exactly right.
It was a tough call at the time, but I'm glad I did it.
Man, no doubt about it. So would you do us the honor, man? Just would you tune one up and you select, man. It's all up to you.
Well, I might as well start with that one that was on the first record.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, 21 was the... It was the first time I wrote a song, and like right after I finished it, I was like, "Man, this one's pretty good."
Yeah.
You know, I don't know
what
it is.
You felt accomplished.
Yeah, I had no idea it would like change the course of my life.
Right, and be what it is.
Yeah, it completely did. It took a little time for it to get out into the world. To spread
imagine
around.
That taking time to become an overnight success, right? Yeah. Because that's what everybody thinks is that it's this artist is just there, but really they've worked for so long to get to where you are now, where people come and love to see you play.
Well, and you know, I'll get people, young artists ask me for advice or whatever, and I give them the most cliche advice, but it's the best advice I know how to give, and that is that if you find real joy in the craft, in the writing, in the performing, you've done it. Like, that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And then if you can, if people, it resonates with people, and people come to the shows, and people share the music with other people, and make memories around it, then that's all just, it's sort of icing. But until you can get, and it's like, you know, with Aubies or Freeman or No Sean Marino, when you see that kind of pure joy and love for this activity, that's what it's all about, you know, and you can't fabricate it, can't make it up.
Right, and then if you could make a living off of it too,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Odds are
you won't be able to
most
make a
likely.
Living unless you find it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So that's like step one.
No kidding, man.
But I remember having that just in the back bedroom at my house when I wrote 21, that feeling that, like, I got chills, like, oh my goodness, there's something special here.
Corey Smith on the Braves Country Podcast.
I was only 17, I couldn't wait for 21. I'd hang around on Clayton Street, and the bars there getting drunk.
A baseball cap and a fake ID would get me in the clubs. Then I would dance with the college girls and lie about who I was. I'd say I'm pre-med here at UGA, live on Millage Avenue. I was raised over in Buckhead, I drive a BMW. I was breaking hearts and taking names and numbers just for fun, stealing kisses, wishing I was 21. Thursdays came and pocket change would quickly disappear. Upstairs at Lowry's Tavern, we'd pay a nickel for the beers. Shooting pool, smoking cigarettes with a dizzy head and a grin. At 4 a.m. on a school night, still hanging out with my friends. 1 hour sleep on a dirty couch, no shower off to school. Smelling just like a brewery with a bad hangover too. The teachers all would hassle me, stay awake, pay attention. I was catching hell, wishing I was 21. The youngest one of all my friends, I didn't act my age. Too cool for the football games and the homecoming parades. Now, I did tweak this song a little bit in 2020, because I initially, when I wrote it, I was 26 years old, and I was just starting my teaching job, so I was feeling kind of old, you know. And so the day I wrote it, I wrote the lines, now I'm only 26, feeling more like 43. And I was using the age 43 as a metaphor for like old as hell, you know.
Yes. Hear, hear.
Yeah.
So over the years. Perspective changes.
Yeah. So over the years, it was kind of tough to sing that. I felt like I was lying to everybody every night. And in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, like, what am I going to do when I turn 43? How am I going to sing this song, you know? And so I turned 43 in 2020. And on the morning of my birthday, I went downstairs and I rewrote the third verse. So this is what I could come up with that morning. Now I'm already 43, damn it happens fast. Once the kids hit elementary school, life goes by in a flash. One day it's kindergarten, the next it's freshman year. Then they're driving down the road and you're just wishing you could steer. But we'll go down to that college town when my Bulldogs get to play. And we'll walk around the campus where I spent my glory days. And I'll recognize myself in the eyes of my two sons as they look around thinking, damn, I wish I was 21.
Oh my gosh, dude! I mean, that one, because I love that song anyway. But because you and I are the same age, and as you're telling the story, I was like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what you're talking about. And then, you know, as you're breaking in the tweaks there a little bit, like all I can see is my son driving away because he's 17, driving away, and we're looking at colleges for him. He's a junior in high school, and you're right, elementary school, freshman year, and now he's a junior, and we're looking at colleges, and that's the beauty of songs like that, because they're so universal.
Well, I think it's definitely the reason I've been stubborn about the way I write for so long. I always like pure singer-songwriters who I could hear evolve through their lives, and I could grow with them.
Right.
And I've always approached my songwriting that way. I never put a lot of pressure on myself to write songs. I just wrote songs when I felt like writing, and the hope was always that is that if in the end, if someone listened to my body of work, they would hear, a man.
Hear you grow up.
Grow up, yeah. And come to terms with things and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, my boys are both, I've got a freshman and a junior, 15 and 16-year-old.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, it's something else. It's the most amazing thing is being able to try to guide them and help them, because you don't want to, you know, corrupt anything that and corrupt's not the right word. You don't want to tell them about every pitfall because they need to make mistakes. You don't want to take the monkey bars off the playground because they need to fall down. And that's the thing that I've wrestled with. And now I think we've done a pretty good job, my wife and I, is letting him make those mistakes and holding his hand through the mistakes, and even though you see them coming, allowing them to happen.
Yeah.
This episode of Braves Country is sponsored by our Braves fan friends down at Century 21, Solomon Properties in Savannah, Georgia, servicing the historic downtown Savannah area, the island area, and Atlanta's beach, beautiful Tybee Island, Georgia. Call Joel Solomon today, 912-604-0896. That's 912-604-0896 for all your real estate needs on the Georgia coast.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
You know, my whole fear has always been, man, I hope they're not like me.
Yeah,
like,
me too. Like, man,
Because I've made some stupid decisions.
Oh my gosh, me
and,
too.
Like so far, like they're good students. They're
same here.
I mean, I hope they don't listen to this. Yeah. But like they're doing a whole lot better than I was doing when I was their age.
Me
like they're
too.
So much more focused than I was.
Me too.
Yeah.
It's so true, man. And it must be our wives that caused that. Because I
could not be y'all.
Dude, there's nothing. I've gotten everything wrong. Like no, I look back and it makes me who I am, which I like. I mean, I'm proud of who I am, don't get me wrong, but at the same time there I wish I could have to go back and tap myself on the shoulder and be like, dude, don't go that way.
Yeah.
Whatever you do.
Well, you know, I've got a song called If I Could Do It Again. And mm-hmm. when I wrote that song around the same time I wrote 21, I was in my late 20s and you know, unabashedly, I'm like, if I could do it again, I'd do it the same. I'm, you know, mm-hmm. I made a lot of mistakes, but, you know, now as a father, mm-hmm. like, you know, in my 40s, I don't feel that way at all. Like, I would totally do some things differently, a lot differently. That doesn't mean I'm not happy where I am.
No, but I mean, but wisdom, life gives you that wisdom, and yeah. that's not something you can learn in a book. You can educate yourself for sure and learn so many things in a book, but there's nothing like the wisdom that life teaches you.
Yep. I remember talking to my high school students about that years ago, the difference between knowledge and wisdom.
Yes. Thank you. That's a great way of putting it.
Wisdom is something that you get it with age and experience.
Because my grandpa, a World War II veteran, was not educated. My dad, same way, was not educated, but they were two of the wisest men I ever met in my whole life, and I miss them every day because I wish I could go back and ask them questions about things that I'm looking forward to or headed into as I get older myself. But it's so true. Knowledge and wisdom, so different.
Now, speaking of learning from experience and going through tough times, Corey Smith, you usually tour around 120 shows a year, but recently, you know, you had to deal with this whole shutdown thing that the whole world dealt with in 2020 and part of 2021. And in the middle of that, I heard that you had to undergo a kind of risky eye surgery. Do you want to talk about that, man?
I've dealt with some vision troubles most of my life. It's one of the reasons I never was an athlete. I didn't play basketball or I didn't play football or baseball or anything, because when I was about nine, I got injured and got hit with a rock in the eye, right? So I had a bunch of little surgeries when I was young, and then I had to have more surgeries when I was in high school to try to save my vision. So I couldn't get, I couldn't risk getting like jostled around and stuff. Later on in life, right before I started teaching, I had a prosthetic eye put in because I couldn't see out of the eye. So, you know, it wasn't really a disability. I didn't have vision for most of my life anyway in my right eye. But it's why I've always worn sunglasses and stuff on stage. My eyes get a little bit wonky, and I didn't want a bunch of pictures of me out there with my eyes all crossed and wonky. You know?
Right. So,
but I had a cataract start developing like in probably like 2018, maybe the end of 2017. And because it's my only eye and I have some underlying like retina issues that run in my family, the doctors decided that there was like a 1 in 3 chance of there being a retinal detachment. So my main ophthalmologist recommended just living with the cataract as long as I could. He was like, you can still work, you can still provide for your family, you know, just stick with it. The cataract might stop growing on its own, and if it gets to the point where it's so bad you can't do those things, then what's the risk? You know, you can't see anyway. So, and I thought that made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
The weird thing was is it led to me, you know, about a year and a half to 2 years of just gradually going blind, where eventually by the end of 2019 was at the point where like I couldn't play cards with my family. I had trouble recognizing, you know, people. I went to the coffee shop one day and my roommate from college said hey to me, and I couldn't see him until I got up and could really hear his voice. I went to my kid's football practice one time and I got, my wife dropped me off and I couldn't find his team. And the guys coaching were all guys I went to high school with. I've known my whole life. Like my cousin was one of them. But it was just getting to that point where I would play shows and I'd have to have help getting on and off the stage. I couldn't read my set list. So people would have to talk through the talkback mic into my ears to tell me what song I needed to do next. So it was getting to the point where I knew I had to do something. And this was at the end of 2019. And I went and saw my doctor, and he was like, yeah, it seems like it's probably time. And, you know, I knew there was a bit of a risk of coming out the other side, you know, still not being able to see. So I wanted to just clear the slate and take care of that and give myself time to heal from it. And so I cleared the calendar for the first time in my career, where I had like 3 months of dates already on the books. And I called my agent and I was like, look, I've got to take care of this. It's my top priority right now. I want to spend time with my family going into it. And so I had to get my head around the idea of not touring. So, you know, knowing what came ahead in 2020, I was actually kind of prepared for that. And I'm thankful for that. And I had the surgery in February and the surgery went great. And I can see better than I've been able to see my whole life.
That's
and it just gave me a whole new outlook on things. And if anything, and not just me, but all the guys that work for me and work with me, you know, we weren't just suddenly cut off. Everybody had months to plan for what that would be like.
Yeah.
But having the year and a half of not touring, it was difficult, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. It gave me just a whole new perspective on things, and creatively, I'm just in a really good place right now.
No, that's awesome, man. The good Lord works in mysterious ways. There's no doubt about it. And, man, God bless you. I'm so glad everything had turned out the way that, you know, that I know you hope and prayed that it would. And I know during the time at home, you released solo acoustic tracks to the fan base on your YouTube series, Songsmith Weekly, which is very clever. Did you come up with that? That's good.
I'm sure somebody did along the way. I don't know if I ought to take credit for it.
Yeah, right. You had you did Where I Wish I Was, Cellophane, and then Going Blind, which is, wow, what a title, man, especially knowing what you've gone through. And everybody was really, really into what you're doing and what you were releasing. Are you going to release some of those songs or at least include them on the next album?
Yeah, that's the idea. And I've been working hard at writing the past, 6 to 8 months. I want to get a lot of songs under my belt. I want to get to where I have like 50 songs that I feel good about and then decide what to do with the record.
Corey Smith, what would you say to other people out there listening that are going through their own health struggles? How would you tell them to hold the line and how to get through all?
For me, I had to depend on the people that love me. And I think that was the hardest thing, is getting to the point where I knew that I couldn't do it by myself. And for a father, a husband, you know, for a man, like, that's a tough thing to do, to say, I need your help. And I got support from the people I was on the road with. You know, fans gave me support, and you know, more importantly, like my wife and my kids, like everybody was there for me. You know, so you got to lean on those people.
Oh my gosh, they're the best.
Now, speaking of helping people out, we've had two artists in here that both have dropped your name recently, and I wanted to talk to you about that. Brantley Gilbert, he says that he would not be a recording artist today if it had not been for you and what he learned touring with you. Tell us all about how you first met Brantley Gilbert and what his coming up playing music with you means from your perspective.
Well, I've known Brantley since he was a little kid because we grew up in Jefferson, not a big town. It's a lot bigger than it was when we were kids.
But, right.
His mom taught a Sunday school class I was in. He was one of the other people in Jefferson that played music. So, I think back in the day, I knew he was playing and singing, and by that point, I was already big time playing at the little bar in Jefferson in front of about 50 to 70 people. So but he came down to the bar one night, and I was already kind of done with my set, and I was like, "Why don't you get up there and play a few?" So he played a few, and we just stayed friends after that, stayed close after that. And when I started branching out and traveling and doing these big, massive tours all the way down to places like Milledgeville.
That's it.
Up to Dahlonega.
Yeah.
He would come along and he would ride with us and sleep in the hotel room with us. And, down at like the first times I played in Statesboro and those kind of places. The first time I played the theater, it was Brantley, and then it was Zach Brown, and then me. So it was really cool. I don't think any of us then knew that, you know, what was ahead. We were just out having a really good time. So it's pretty cool when you see people close to you succeed. It's kind of, I don't know, you feel like, you know, it's part of your identity.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, cool. Man, it's incredible. You know, I think that's one of the most amazing things. That's some of my favorite things to see is that artists that come up together and how they branch out and how they still support each other and what happens.
Well, you know, it's weird too that for me, like I. When I've seen Brantley live, like after he had his number one hits and huge crowds, you know, and see him up on stage, I realized like I couldn't do that, you know. Mm-hmm. He has a different personality than I do. He's more comfortable in the spotlight. He's more comfortable with the attention, and I can say the same about like I did a bunch of shows back in the day with Florida Georgia Line. You know, when they were starting out, they opened up shows, and I could see it in them too. Like these guys have, there's something different that they have that I don't have. And you know, it took me a while to acknowledge that. I would always be like kind of scratching my head, like, and I realized it's different. And the cool thing about where I'm at in my life now is like hearing Brantley say things like that. It warms my heart to know that, you know what, I'm a part of his music. I helped influence that, and the same with like Tyler and Florida Georgia Line or Luke Combs or whoever it is. Riley Green, I've known Riley Green for years. Like to go to Nashville and meet young writers and young artists who say they grew up listening to me,
that's
happy.
That's the coolest.
I'm happy with that role. And it makes me feel really good.
Oh my gosh, that's the coolest.
Veteran leadership, just like Freddie Freeman.
Absolutely
for the team.
Absolutely right.
You know?
Yeah, another guy, Levi Lowry.
Levi Lowry, another neighbor and friend of yours. He says he has been writing some songs with you recently. He maybe let the cat out of the bag on that one. And what can you tell us about your friendship with Levi Lowry and how's the songwriting process going with him?
Oh, it's been going great. I've really enjoyed getting to know him lately. I was down in, I've known Levi for years, casually, you know, just crossing paths at different points. And but back in June, I was down in Isle of Palms and I was hanging out with Wyatt Durrett at his house, and we were working on some songs, and he was like, "Man, you need to get together with Levi." And I was like, "Yeah, I do. I haven't seen him in years." And I'm like, "He's like, well, I know he lives in Georgia," and I'm like, "Well, where does he live?" And Wyatt's like, "Oh, I think it's Winder."
Right.
I was like, "Winder?
Winder, Georgia?
He lives in Winder?" and he was like, "Here's his address," and I'm like, "Dude, he lives like 10 minutes from me. Are you kidding me?" And there were so many times in 2020 where I was just, even though my whole career I've written songs by myself and I've embraced that and I've loved that, for the first time I was like such a hermit, I would have given anything to have somebody just to bounce ideas off of and make music with. And I just kicked myself like, oh my goodness, he was 10 minutes away this whole time. So we connected, and he's been coming over you know, once or twice a month, and it's been awesome.
You guys ride on the front porch, or you go down to the basement, backyard? How do you guys hang out?
Back porch. We got a screened-in porch, you know, and I've got a little studio down in the basement, so we kind of go, you know.
Go between the two?
Yeah.
I love that. No, I love it. So I grew up in Dalton, Georgia, just south of Chattanooga. And I've seen, there's a matter of fact, here at the radio station, there's a company that came in. They're called 1776 United. And they just create American Heritage T-shirts, right? And it's, you know, the Constitution and some, like, I was in the Navy, so the Union Jack, they do that. They've got the Gadsden flag, Don't Tread on Me, which is important to the United States Navy. And for whatever reason, some of the social media platforms that they used to sell their shirts on, they've taken them down. They can't sell their shirts on the internet, or at least on the social media platforms. And they've seen their business, which was in like a rocket ship, taken off. Two kids from Canton, just two regular dudes. And they saw their business take off. And then all of a sudden, when they got banned, they weren't able to do that anymore. And you wrote a song called Chattanooga. And that one stood out to me a little bit because it addresses censorship head on from a personal perspective. And you've got the line in there, if we don't check power, then power checks us. And that's exactly what it seemed like with those guys that literally I just met today. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that this conversation has kind of went from that room to this one. And what do you think about censorship that we're seeing in America right now? Because it's frightening to me.
Yeah, I think that there's censorship in the respect that I wrote the song was, it's the government saying you can't say this. Mm-hmm. And specifically that situation was the police in Chattanooga saying I couldn't sing a song that was critical of the police in Chattanooga.
Right.
That's what the First Amendment's designed to specifically protect. So it is different when it's private businesses choosing not to,
agreed.
Do this. So it's
agreed, and I understand the difference. I get totally get the difference, but it just still scares me because of the grasp at these social media networks and places like YouTube, because they have their tentacles in everything. So right, it is a private business, and I understand the difference, but it still makes me feel very uneasy, much like you're describing there.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. I could also, at the same time, social media and the lack of any sort of filter in terms of, and this is not relevant to what you're saying.
No, I get it.
I don't know much about the t-shirts or anything like that, but I'm saying that any opinion is now capable of going viral and affecting people, whether it's based on complete falsehoods and nonsense or not. It can still go viral and impact a lot of people who, and this is the social studies teacher in me. Like, to me, my job that I was trained for in school was to teach kids how to think critically and how to evaluate information and not just jump on whatever bandwagon. Because when it comes to society and big social issues, it's not like it is with our teams. You don't just choose a side and root for that side no matter what.
That's right.
Because life's more complicated than that. And just like
and when more nuanced,
it's much more nuanced. And I think we live in a society now where there's so much information. It's like, oh, my goodness, I don't know. I don't know.
But who should decide what should be or not put out there? And isn't it up to the power of the individual and their critical thinking to analyze that and decide, well, that might be viral, but I'm not paying attention to it anymore? Or is it the job of the company, the private company, in this case a social media company, to proclaim something, you know, inappropriate for consumption?
Yeah, I think the best I can give you there is I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I'm fine with that.
It's tough.
I'm not sure. I'm just not sure.
Well, I think the question comes down to, is social media a new public utility, or is it a private company? And I think we're going to have to decide that in this country.
There's a lot of nuance in that statement in and of itself. But so going back to Chattanooga, so I remember when this happened, and it stinks that somebody could come in and say, nope, you can't sing that song. Like, what? That's not the America that I love.
No, you know, it was a weird night. It was the weirdest night of my career, I think. I've got the song Popo that I wrote years and years ago about getting arrested at home, and it became a fan favorite. I played at the shows, and if anyone who's listened to the song, it's sort of self-explanatory. And I wasn't trying to make a broad political statement or anything. Sure. It's like I got arrested one night for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I went to jail. I didn't break any laws. They knew I hadn't broken any laws, but they still were able to put me in jail. When I got booked in the jail, I had several hundred dollars taken out of my pocket, and then I was coerced to sign a document saying it wasn't there. And there was no recourse, really. You know, eventually the charges were dropped because I didn't break a law, but and that made me angry. And so I wrote an angry song called F the Popo, in which I still was clear to say, this song isn't about all police. This
right.
song is
about this incident.
About this type of hot-headed person who gets emotional and makes rash decisions. And, you know, and it was tongue-in-cheek and kind of funny, became popular, whatever. So I played it in Chattanooga several years later at this place called Rhythm and Brews.
I know exactly where
and,
it is.
And a police officer came in. I don't know if he was in uniform or not, but either way, I didn't know I was on stage playing, and it was time for me to play that song. And he walked in right as I was starting to play the song. I had no idea. And someone in the balcony poured a beer on him, and he was livid and blamed me mm-hmm. as if I was trying to target him. I had no right. idea that he was in there. So that caused some bad blood, and I wasn't able to play in Chattanooga for about 5 years after that. The promoter was even specifically like, yeah, I ain't going to have you back. You know, he said that he was going to, you know, make life tough for me. So eventually a new venue opens up, and this is like 5 years later. I'm able to go back and play at this big show, and the same police officer had been promoted to head of the ABC and came in that night. And now, granted, the weekend before, I think Jamie Johnson or somebody had played, and there had been a bad fight, and mm-hmm. I think somebody got hurt, and there had been a problem. But the night that I played, sold out. It was the biggest night I'd had in Chattanooga ever. It was a huge night for me. The crowd is just pumped. Get to the end of the set, it's encore time, and the crowd's chanting, you know?
Yeah.
And as I walk off stage to get ready for encore, my tour manager comes to me, and he's like, hey, Corey, they said you can't play Popo. And I'm thinking, well, who said this? Yeah, who's they? Like, I have a contract, and these people are all 18 and over. They're adults
yeah.
who are asking me to play a song, and they paid me to come here and play. Who is telling me I can't play it? And it was the same guy that was there.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I was livid, and I got on stage, and I sat down with my guitar, and then I'm thinking, all right, what do I do? Do I play this song? And I thought, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make every effort to explain my position here. And I explained the song. I was like, this song is not about any police officer in this building, any police officer. I know there was a fight here last week. This has nothing to do with that. This is a song I wrote about a situation that happened to me. And I've been told that they're going to cut me off if I start to play it, but I feel like I need to play it. So I started, and I played the first riff, and they cut the PA off, and the place went nuts. I mean, like, almost a riot.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It was like, scary.
Yeah.
So we have to leave, and, that was censorship.
Yeah,
And then later everybody denies that anybody ever told me that I made it all up, like whatever.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Somebody turned the PA off and it wasn't.
Now, what year was this?
Ooh.
Because what I'm thinking is that this is where social media helps, because that's the kind of thing that now with social media you can really campaign against, you know. You can get people involved and everybody could kind of rise up against it. Whereas a few years back when you didn't have that kind of bullhorn, you'd go through something like that and you'd, like you said, you'd never be able to play Chattanooga again. And we had the same problem on a couple tours I went through, and it's it's kind of lightening up now because you can go online and talk about it and gain support.
Yeah, and we did a little bit of that then, but, you know, at the end of the day, it was fine. I went back to Chattanooga, and I've had great memories there. I went back a few years later and played, the next year, and recorded the show and put out a record from there. It's just, you know, stuff happens. But to me, that's specifically the kind of thing that the First Amendment protects us against, is censorship by the government to keep us from criticizing the government.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, exactly.
And when we get into an area where it's not that, it's something else. It's more nuanced. It's more complex.
Absolutely.
Then that's where I'm just going to have to go, I ain't sure. Above my pay grade.
It is. I think it's above all of our pay grades, but I think it's imperative that we figure it out. You know what I mean? Because I think it's important for the country to figure it out. But anyway, we could get into the politics of it, and there's not a lot of need in that, because that always goes sideways, man. I'd rather talk about good music and barbecue and Braves and Bulldogs.
But one final thought on that. You know, you did write a great song for your kids called Speak the Truth, and I think that might be the answer these days. And you give some great advice in that song. And how do you think that applies to the world today?
You know, I wrote that song after I saw a bumper sticker, and it had a quote from the Nazi propaganda minister, Goebbels.
Really?
That said, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, say a lie, repeat it enough, say it forcefully enough, and people
They'll believe it.
Will believe it. I thought, that's why it's so important to be honest, and I just... And this was years ago, probably 2013, 2014 or something. And I just thought, you know, that's and as a songwriter, that's what I always, you know, strive for was to be honest. You know, I've got friends that write a lot of great songs, and their philosophy is don't let the truth get in the way of a good song.
Right, right.
And
no,
I get that because there's a lot of great songs that may not be literally true, but the sentiment is.
Yeah.
But for me, I've always wanted to be very honest and transparent, and that's why I've ended up with songs like F the Popo that probably haven't been great for my career and have led a lot of people to misunderstand me as a person.
Probably so.
But I always thought I would rather err on the side of
authenticity.
Being honest and, you know, and I think if anything, it's tough. It's tough nowadays.
It is, man. You're exactly right. And especially with kids, going back to kids and trying to help them understand and guide them down the right path and to instill those values that are so important to you. Dude, do you mind playing that song? Because I think that's so perfect.
Or, you know, or Chattanooga or Speak the Truth or one that you want to play.
Or whatever, man.
I don't think I got either one of those. I definitely can't do Chattanooga. And I haven't played Speak the Truth in a long time, probably since I put it on that Chattanooga album.
Well, how about...
I got a better one.
Okay.
I got a better one.
Here we go.
It feels better here in the battery today, especially.
I love it.
Corey Smith has a plan.
I've got a plan, trust me.
It's better than me because I never have a plan. I would have to lean on my wife because she's always got at least it good at making plans.
So, like I mentioned before, I remember coming down to Fulton County Stadium and seeing the Braves there, and you know, watching. I remember the slide by Sid Bream.
Oh,
I remember watching
that
game with my dad, and it was a school night, and I was up way too late. And my dad didn't even watch a lot of baseball, but we watched that game together, and I'll never forget it. And flash forward many years, and my kids were playing T-ball, and I was out at the T-ball practice, and like some of the guys I played ball with were coaching now, and they were practicing. The practice fields were the fields that were the fields when I was a kid, you know. And I just remember looking out there at it all, just like, what a game, you know, like what a game that spans generations. It's such a tradition. And that was the year that Chipper Jones was retiring. And as I was sitting out there watching the kids, I just thought about, you know, what the game means to so many people. And then I thought about a guy like Chipper, whose whole life he's taken it as far as you can take it, you know, and like now it's time to go. Well, you know, I guess it's time to do something else. And obviously, everybody knew he was going to stay around the game in some way.
Sure.
But I kind of put myself in his shoes, and I thought about my career and some of the things that we've talked about so far that staying focused on the long term. Anyway, I went home and sat on the porch, and I wrote this song called The Baseball Song.
That's perfect.
It's the most original title I could come up with.
Well, but beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Straight ahead, as always, Corey Smith on the Braves Country Podcast.
The first thing I remember is the game that I love. A man on a diamond with a golden glove. Daddy with me in the cheap seats above, saying, boy, keep your eye on the ball. The crack of the bat, the stadium's roar. We were up on our feet for the tie-breaking score. I said, Daddy, I know what you brought me here for. He said, good, I hoped you'd hear the call. Life's a fastball, belt high, coming right down the middle. Don't stand there and let it go by. Swing hard and aim for the stand. My field of dreams was covered in stone, an old gravel parking lot next to our home. Dad on the mound until the daylight was gone, saying, boy, keep your eye on the ball. Cause it's hey batter, swing batter, swing. The world is an infield always chattering. If you don't concentrate, they'll spoil your timing and you'll walk away cussing them all. Life's a fastball, coming right down the middle. Don't stand there and let it go by. Swing hard and aim for the stands. And thank God for your fans. 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 Dad threw a party when I got the call. All the years on the farm team finally paid off. Now I'm in the big leagues aiming for the fall. Every summer's a long playoff run. As I walk to the plate, I look in the stands and I see myself and I see my old man. I hear my family and all of my friends cheering, boy, keep your eye on the ball. It's a fastball, belt high, coming right down the middle. I'm gonna mail one to the grandstands. Good glory, this one's for the fans. Thank God for the fans. Thank God for the fans. Thank God for the fans. And my old man.
Boy, so relatable. It doesn't matter what it is you're doing, whether you're an entertainer, an artist, or a baseball player. Thank God for the fans, because they set the mood, they set the you know, just the scene for a great show or a great game. And I know you have a ton of tour dates coming up, a lot shows here in Braves country, Louisiana, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, of course here in Georgia, Friday, January 7th here at the Battery at the Roxy, right next door to where we're recording right now. If you want to learn more about where you can see Corey Smith, make sure you go to coreysmith.com/tour for all of the Corey Smith
things. Man, that is a fantastic song, Corey. I got to tell you, man, that we love baseball songs, but that's been my top two or three baseball songs right there, and it's the first time I ever heard it.
Well, it's so amazing, dude. I'm telling you. It's so amazing.
Where'd you come up with that one, and what record was it on?
It ended up being on While the Getting's Good. Okay. I did a version of it on there. Oddly enough, I was so excited when I wrote the song, I put it on YouTube or whatever, and then I had a friend at SunTrust who I called, and I sent him the song. He was like, oh, dude, and so let me make some phone calls. And long story short, 2 days later, I'm at Turner Field in the Braves office, and they loved the song, and I ended up coming down here and recording a video, and they played it in the stadium for a whole season.
I remember that. Yeah, cool. Was that 2013 probably,
something like that,
somewhere in there? Yeah, that sounds right to me.
They all run together.
I know they do. You're exactly right. No, so good though.
I remember my kids were about that tall.
I know, but I'm telling you, it's amazing how we all go back to those places in time, and you can usually remember it by where your kids were and how.
But it's a classic, and it's now part of the Braves landscape, if you will, and part of our heritage down here. So way to go, man. Great song.
So here as we wrap up, here is a great question that we always ask everyone, and this is my favorite question that we ever ask, because the answers are always
All over the board.
I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, this was, be ready. Like, be like Yosemite Sam, like a gunslinger.
All right.
Favorite Southern mom and pop restaurants across Braves country.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
Barbecue, meat and three,
yeah, whatever.
Southern cooking.
All right. One place that jumps to mind immediately is Mississippi's Braves country.
No, of course it is. Mississippi Braves are there.
Yeah. In Oxford, Mississippi, Ajax on the square in downtown Oxford, Mississippi. Wonderful meat and three place. Nice. I'm talking incredible. Cornbread's great. Their meatloaf's great. They usually have good, really good greens in there. I've hated turnip greens, collard greens when I was a kid. Now I can't get enough of them.
And it's walking distance from Proud Larry, so you can just walk right over there.
Yeah. The Lyric,
like you've been there before.
Yeah, that place is great. You know, we're kind of blessed, right? Especially right now in the Battery.
Oh my gosh,
yeah. Fox Brothers, right?
Absolutely.
Fox Brothers is hard to beat.
That is solid as a rock right there.
Hard to beat some Fox Brothers.
What's your standard order at Fox Brothers?
I'm a big fan of smoked chicken wings.
Yes, sir.
I really like their brisket too, though.
Oh my gosh,
they have a really good brisket. And I've eaten Texas brisket a lot out in Texas proper, and man, I don't know that I can. You know, food gets to a certain point where it's just good. It's hard to rank it. You know, it's like it's up there. It's elite.
Well, that's the good thing about the Fox. That's the good thing about the Fox Brothers is they're two guys from Texas who came here, and now they kind of like they have the Texas and the Georgia and the Carolina barbecue all covered at the same time.
You know, I like McCoy's up in Charlotte. McCoy's Smokehouse and Saloon. Have you ever been up there? Charlotte?
I've never been. No, I need to try.
They're really good.
Make myself a note.
Really good. They have really good wings too, and they have this Calypso sauce that they put on their smoked wings.
Uh-huh.
It's good.
Now, are you a ranch or a blue cheese man?
I'm both. Okay. I'll have both with mine, please.
Okay,
and then I'll take turns.
Wow. Okay, all right. See, and I'm a neither. Like, I don't get
strictly,
any.
I'm strictly blue cheese.
For a good smoked wing, you really don't need it, but I still, you know, I'm a threat to dunk a fry in some blue cheese.
That's right. No, I know. Right? Okay, so here's mine, and my wife makes fun of me. This name comes from an old Seinfeld episode. I'm a much-up guy. Ketchup and mustard mixed. I call it much-up because it actually came from a Seinfeld episode. I thought it was so brilliant because that's what I always did, and it's what my mama always did, too, so I eat it on hot dogs, I ate it on French fries, I ate it on hamburgers, I ate it on chicken sandwich. Dude, ketchup and mustard is my go-to.
Ain't that called it's 57 sauce is what it is. You come out with the Heinz 57 when you mix that stuff. That's
what? I don't think that's right.
No, try that 57.
It's all about the proportions.
It is.
He obviously has the proportions down to make it much up.
Oh, my gosh,
what
man.
What is that? Are you going to share that with us? Like, what's
So I'm a 60-40 ketchup to mustard.
I see.
Okay.
Or even a 70-30, depending on what you're having.
Okay.
Because the mustard is a little bit salty. You know, it's got that little bit of a salty kind of flavor to it, or at least it does to me. And so if I'm eating something salty, I'll back off the mustard just a tick. And there's layers. There's layers because it's different layers of orange. You know what I mean? When you mix them up, you get a different orange. And people think I'm absolutely nuts when I talk about this.
Corey Smith, what about Athens, Georgia, or Jefferson, Georgia? Your favorite restaurant in that area?
Oh, man, that's another tough one.
Yeah, a lot of them.
That's another tough one. Athens, you know, we played at the theater in August, I guess, and I was so disappointed because the tradition in Athens is late night after we're done with the theater shows, go down to the grill and pig out on feta fries. You ever had the feta fries?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and we walked all the way down there and they were closed.
What?
Yeah, I was like, oh no.
So
me and my wife, and I had my friend Jeb Gibson, who's from Raven County, and he was down opening the show. And I'd be like, oh, we're going to go down and get some feta fries. It's going to blow your mind. They're so good.
Right.
Yeah. So he's with us. We walk all the way down there and it's like, I guess we're going to go back to the hotel, you know, peace.
Yeah.
And so then me and my wife are walking back towards the hotel, just devastated that we couldn't get our feta fries. And then we topped the hill and we saw that Little Italy was open.
Yeah.
I hadn't had a Little Italy pizza in forever. So we're like, that'll do.
There you go,
so
man.
So we go and we stand in line at Little Italy, and we're the oldest people there by 15 years.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're just surrounded by, like, drunk college kids. And But it ended up being fine. I burnt my mouth because the pizza was so hot and I was so hungry and it was so late and I was a little drunk.
Yeah.
And then I just sat there and people watched and it was like a time machine.
Yeah.
Like it hadn't changed a bit since I was in school.
Like you've lived this before.
Yes, except now I'm like the creepy old guy. Everybody's looking at me like,
who's this guy? Yeah. And I have a feeling in Athens, Georgia, people probably recognize you.
A few people did.
Yeah.
But they were more focused at that point on their pizza.
Yeah, right.
Calzones.
Well, I get it.
Jefferson's got some good grub, though. The Jefferson House, that's the standard in Jefferson. That's your meat and three place. They have their specials. Carriage House, they've got a nice buffet, like the country style buffet. That place is pretty good.
I'm writing these down because my sister just moved to Jefferson.
I've only
been over to her house one time, so I'm not exactly sure where.
Yep.
But she just moved over there. That way, when I go visit, I know where to go.
Then I'll tell you the real secret.
Okay.
So across from the old mill. When I was a kid, it was Owen Webb Snack Shack.
Uh-huh.
Just a little shack. You walk up to it, you order your burger and your fries or your dogs or whatever, and you sit down at a picnic table outside, and it's changed hands over the years, but it's back, and it's the Snack Shack. And they have a really good burger and, like, good good like fresh cut fries and stuff. So that's a little secret. But you gotta be ready when the weather's nice. It's, you know, you go sit out there at a picnic table.
Heck yeah, yeah. Man.
I
man,
think my just next open for lunch.
My next trip to Jefferson to see my sister Jennifer is going to be a stop at one of these three: the Snack Shack, the Jefferson, or the Carriage House.
Yeah, or if you get crazy,
okay, all right,
you take the drive out to Maysville, Georgia.
Yeah, okay.
You leave Jefferson
deep
and you go to
it's deep south.
You go to Maysville, Georgia, and there's a place there called Xaris. X A R I.
X-A-R-I-S.
Yes, and if you're feeling like a man, go get the X Burger there. They have the massive X Burger. It's like, I think if you finish it, you get a free T-shirt.
Is it just because it's gigantic?
It's gigantic.
Like it's like the Great Outdoors with John Candy, yeah. Where if you finish the steak, you get it free.
Yeah, yeah, but they have great burgers. I wouldn't recommend the X Burger because it's a lot, but they have great chili burger and stuff, like fresh, you know, handmade patties. And
gosh,
they grind their meat
good.
There fresh every day. It's
my
good
gosh,
stuff.
I am starving.
You
want
to go to Maysville now?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Be there
how,
two
quick,
hours.
How quick can we get there? That's exactly right.
Tug, you take the whole family there and just get one X Burger and cut it up.
That's right. That reminds me of growing up. Mom and Daddy, you know, they worked in carpet mills. They didn't have a whole lot of money. So every now and then we'd go and they'd order the big one and we'd split it. You know, we've been there before. That ain't no shame in that game. Goodness gracious. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh,
man.
My pleasure. Thank you all for having me.
It is
great day to be down here.
Oh, my gosh. Every day is a great day at the Battery. But we just want to tell you how much we appreciate you and let you know that you're always welcome, man. You're always welcome here. And we love you and love your music. And anytime you're around, you know, or you got new music out or a tour, we always want to promote it and push it and talk about it and let folks know that love your music as much as we do, where it is and where they can get it.
All right, I will keep you posted. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank
come on back now. You know you're part of the Braves Country family. You have been, and now you're part of the show, man. We love you, man.
Well, thank you. Go Braves, go Dogs.
That's exactly right,
go
man.
Go Braves and go Dogs.
All right, so last, really, really last question. Because we've had some heartbreaks. As a Georgia fan, as a Falcons fan, as a Braves fan, we've had heartbreaks. If, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it did, the Braves went on and won the World Series and Georgia went on and won a national championship same year, does it wipe the slate clean from all the heartache?
Probably. It'll go a long way.
I would think so.
Well, you know, obviously Georgia won the championship, you know, 80, 81, I don't remember that. I was just
nor do
kid,
I.
Right?
I was three.
So I don't know what it's like. So I asked my friends. I've got some friends that are Clemson fans. And I've got some friends that are Bama fans. Mm-hmm. And they've said the same thing when I've asked them. Like, so what's it like when your team goes all the way and you win it? They said, well, it's like every other season, but you don't get disappointed.
Oh, wow.
And I thought,
there's never a point of being disappointed because they went the whole way and won it all.
Yeah.
So brilliant.
Yeah.
It seems so simple, though.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice to go the whole way and, like, never have that one?
That moment.
I'll tell you that the watching Georgia lose, watching the Braves lose, Georgia lose in the same year of going to the Super Bowl and watching the Falcons lose, I was in a bad head place especially after the Georgia loss, right?
Yeah.
And I started thinking, I would oftentimes have like friendly like $50 bets on Georgia games.
Right? Sure.
And I always lost them. And I started thinking, you know what I should start doing is I should start betting against my team so that when they lose, I can at least go, well, I won $50.
Yeah, I love it.
I never could. That was like the dark side. Okay. I couldn't bring myself to do it, but I thought it would have probably been the more rational thing
well
to do.
Well, thought it's back to critical thinking, man. You're like, okay, how do I fix this situation? How do I remedy this?
But let me tell you from experience, the guilt afterwards, it's not worth it.
It wouldn't be worth it.
It's not worth it.
Cheering against your team, that dude, you deserve. Like, anybody that would really do that, like, because I understand that, but like, you can't be a real fan and do that.
Oh, no.
You couldn't. Like your heart
all
would
credibility
be,
would be gone.
Yeah, man. It's just your heart would be broken. Yeah. At the same time, you're taking this dirty $50 bill, and you're like, oh,
that's what a dark place I was in those weeks and months after the loss.
Now, when they win the World Series, we're going to call you up and get your commentary on the whole thing. All right?
Okay, that sounds good. It won't be worth much, but
what you talking about? It's worth a lot to us.
I'll probably say it was awesome. We didn't get disappointed. Wasn't
that
great?
Right. Yeah, absolutely, dude. The simple truth. That's all we need. The simple truth. This is Braves Country on the Atlanta Braves Radio Network. Thank you, Corey Smith, man. God bless you and continued success.
This episode of Braves Country is sponsored by our Braves fan friends down at Century 21, Solomon Properties in Savannah, Georgia, servicing the historic downtown Savannah area, the island area, and Atlanta's beach, beautiful Tybee Island, Georgia. Call Joel Solomon today, 912-604-0896. That's 912-604-0896 for all your real estate needs on the Georgia coast.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.